Good morning. This is James Stevenson in the NBC newsroom in New York, with the news from around the world and calling in NBC observers overseas and at San Francisco. The Allied nations have awakened from a weekend of nightmares occasioned by false peace rumors to find the European war still at full tilt, although the fall of Germany comes closer with every hour. Russian troops have all but captured Berlin, which has been reduced to piles of burning rubble. Moscow is expected to announce complete occupation of the German capital at almost any time. Elsewhere in Germany, the United States 7th Army has entered Munich, where Nazi resistance has collapsed. The notorious concentration camp at Dachau, northwest of Munich, has been captured, liberating approximately 32,000 prisoners. And the American 3rd Army is surging toward Berchtesgaden, having reached a point within 75 miles of Hitler's former hideout. The British in the north have crossed the Elbe east of Hamburg and are moving farther east to seal off Denmark. In the Pacific, hard fighting continues on southern Okinawa, while American B-29s hit Japanese installations on Honshu and Kyushu Islands for the fifth consecutive day. And now, a few words from your announcer.
Ladies, would you knowingly throw money away? Well, you are, or at least many of you are. Yes, $1 billion is wasted each year on oversealing payments on food. $1 billion, which is paid out pennies at a time. True, a few pennies here and a few pennies there doesn't seem like much, but when added up, they can invite a period of wild inflation. So it's up to you, ladies, to do your part to see to it that this doesn't happen. It's up to you to watch every penny, to check ceiling prices, and to question the grocer on any price which appears to be out of line. Let's not undo all the good that has been done by our common efforts to hold ceiling prices. We need everyone's cooperation. Remember, watch every penny. Every penny counts. Now, here's James Stevenson and your World News Roundup.
The peace rumors which sent the British and American people into ecstasies of joy over the weekend are persisting today. Stockholm reports that Count Bernadotte, who is supposed to have been the intermediary who carried a peace proposal from Heinrich Himmler to Great Britain and the United States, returned to Germany on Saturday with a rejection. According to so-called informed sources, the rejection was due to the German offer of unconditional surrender being addressed only to Britain and the United States. Bernadotte is now supposed to be on his way back to Allied headquarters with a new proposal of surrender which includes Russia and thus presumes to correct the error. It can be expected that peace rumors will again run wild this week, beginning with today and continuing on and on. There seems to be a race among some reporters and diplomats to be the first to announce the news of peace. It is the rush for this doubtful honor which may again send the nation into a wave of hysterical rejoicing for which there is no foundation. As pointed out by President Truman, news of peace will come from the White House and not from any unofficial sources, regardless as to how authentic and reliable they may be. So until the White House, either by proclamation of the president or by official statement, announces peace in Europe, the public should regard all announcements with skepticism. And after Germany's capitulation is officially announced, there appears to be little justification for a national holiday or celebration. Certainly the news will be welcome, and the relatives of every American now fighting in Europe will give thanks that the killing is over. But we still have to fight a major war against Japan, and it would be sacrilege for the nation to throw itself into an orgy of celebrations while American boys still are being killed in the Pacific theater of action. A grateful nation may rejoice when the war against Germany is over, but rather than give way to hysterical celebrating, it should tighten its belt for the big job of defeating Japan. Now for our first broadcast from overseas, we go to NBC with General Bradley's headquarters in Germany.
This is David Anderson speaking from General Bradley's command post. Two significant developments have taken place from the 12th Army Group front. One, the 9th Army has broken out of its Barbary bridgehead, that small strip of East Elbe territory which we held at great cost, and the 3rd Army has brought up its right flank up to and across the Yser River on a 65-mile front. You may remember the excitement a couple of weeks ago when 9th Army forces made a crossing of the Elbe River. It was secured under fire and held at some cost by a stubborn American defense. But once the bridgehead had been secured, the 9th Army was instructed not to exploit it for the time being. Their orders were to hold if the cost was not too great, and they were even given permission to withdraw to the west bank of the Elbe if German pressure became too heavy. To many armchair strategists, it may have seemed that the 9th Army was Berlin bound. but it was never intended that the Ninth Army should ever go into Berlin. General Bradley was following the strategy so successfully carried out by the Russians in their westward push. He wanted to stop across the river line, just in case later exploitation was deemed necessary. Now, instead of waiting for the Russians to come to meet us, a policy thus far followed on the 12th Army Group front, we are attacking out of our East Elbe bridgehead toward the Russian line. In our 12-mile advance yesterday to the small village of Dübben, we came to a point some 10 miles from Russian-held Wittenberg. Of perhaps greater long-range significance is a Third Army push to and beyond the Yser River line. This river cuts south through the city of Munich and is one of the last two larger rivers to cross before our entry into Hitler's last-ditch hideout. It was expected that the Germans would attempt to stand along this river line. But now that we are across in three places with armor out in front, it may be expected that the Battle of Salzburg, Berchtesgaden, and other national raid-out strongholds will come much sooner than any of the Nazis anticipated. The reported extension to Tuesday night of the Allied offer of unconditional surrender to Himmler is being followed with just as much interest over here as it is at home. However, the basis for all discussions of capitulation are military on this side, not political. We are confident that even if Hitler refuses to surrender, the frontline position today spells an early doom to the Third Reich. We are within striking distance of the core of Nazism, and we aim to strike unless the Germans throw in the towel. This is David Anderson returning you to NBC in New York.
Supplementing Anderson's report, here is news of the fighting in Berlin. Soviet shock troops massed near Adolf Hitler's Reichschancellery and the fortified Tiergarten, and the fall of the ruined capital appears imminent. Suicides and desertions are whittling the ranks of the capital's defenders as the Russians squeeze the mauled German garrison into a flame-swept 18-square-mile pocket, all that remains to the Nazis of Greater Berlin's 431 square miles. For our next report, we go to the NBC newsroom in San Francisco.
This is Alex Dreyer speaking. This is going to be a fast-moving week here in San Francisco. There's much to be done, and it's got to be done fast. That's the opinion of every delegate, now that the feeling is general that the announcement of a Nazi capitulation is imminent. Today, the conference will select the various commissions and committees, authorize conference seats for two Soviet member republics, and will seek to answer claims of the little nations, who will demand, among other things, that the Security Council be enlarged from 11 members to 14. There will be a general meeting of the American delegation at 9 o'clock this morning, Pacific Coast time, and that will be the earliest it has yet met. Another indication of the feeling here that speed in moving ahead toward a conference conclusion is of primary importance now that the German is staggering on the ropes and squealing for the towel. On Saturday, I had a long talk with Commander Harold E. Stassen, outstanding member of the Republican Party and one of our delegates to the conference, who says that there is a very strong inner urge among all of the delegations to see that success crowns the deliberations of the conference. He maintains, and rightly, that much spade work has already been done and that the desire to cooperate is evident among all of the delegations. Molotov he characterized, as does everyone out here, a shrewd and clever bargainer. The Russian knows what he wants, but backs down, as he did in the Polish situation, when he realizes that the show of strength against him is firm and resolute. It is becoming increasingly obvious that conference tempo is essential, now that the German nation hears the death rattle and is ready to accept unconditional surrender. And out here where we face the Pacific, you will quickly see the war news of the Pacific taking away the headlines from the European war and the conference. They're getting ready to hit the beaches again and at a number of points. That's an opinion from the armchair, but this armchair has a straight back. And that's the news from here. Now, back to the NBC newsroom in New York.
The Italian government has condoned the summary execution of Benito Mussolini and other top-flight fascists by Northern patriots, while the Rome press hailed their extinction as paving the way for the reestablishment of real democracy in Italy. For our next report now, we return to Europe for information on developments in the fighting in Berlin. We go now to NBC in Moscow. Come in, NBC Moscow. We are sorry that we cannot reach NBC in Moscow. Here's a report of the situation in the Pacific. American ground troops are fighting doggedly today for two airfields, their immediate objectives on southern Okinawa. Fleet Admiral Chester W. Nimitz reported that total American casualties on Okinawa and nearby islands were 11,413, including 1,847 killed through Friday. Meanwhile, five Army medical officers and six Army nurses were among 29 or more persons killed Saturday night in a suicidal Japanese plane crash onto the stern of the hospital ship USS Comfort, 50 miles south of Okinawa. The plane struck the operating room. Vice Admiral Richard K. Turner, commander of the 3rd Fleet Amphibious Force, said ships rushed to the aid of the Comfort as soon as the attack was reported. He added these words, "My printable comment on this outrage is unprintable." And Lieutenant General Buckner, 10th Army commander, who was visiting Admiral Turner today, said, "This is terrible. Any comment I could make on this wouldn't go through the mails." American troops observed Emperor Hirohito's birthday by raising the American and Philippine flags over captured Baguio yesterday and by launching a new offensive northward from the summer capital. Contrary to Tokyo broadcasts, no Japanese counterattack was launched, and the flags went up in an unmolested ceremony. At the same time, United States infantrymen drove on Davao City from the south and east today, supported by planes operating off a freshly captured airfield just 30 miles south of the big Mindanao port city. And swift American PT boats appeared in Davao Gulf for the first time Saturday to shell enemy installations. This morning, we heard from NBC observers David Anderson with General Bradley's headquarters in Germany and Alec Dreyer at San Francisco. Now here's your announcer, and then I'll be back with more news.
When the war with Germany is over, millions of troops and tons of supplies must be moved from Europe to the Pacific. We have the ships, more than 4,000, but what we do not have and what we need immediately are men, experienced seamen who have had the training and experience to handle these ships. The only way for the Merchant Marine to get these men is to urge every able-bodied, experienced seaman who is now working ashore to return to the job that he and he alone can fill. The possibilities for rapid advancement are even greater now than before the war. You licensed officers and men with certificates of ABs, firemen, oilers, and water tenders, this is an urgent plea from your country to you. Apply at once by wiring collect to Merchant Marine, Washington, D.C., Wire collect to Merchant Marine, Washington, D.C. Give your rating or license and your address. If you're accepted for duty, you'll be put on standby pay immediately, and you'll be furnished transportation to your port of assignment. And again, here's James Stevenson in the NBC newsroom.
The Tokyo radio acknowledged today that the end of the European war seems near, but said this would have no effect on the struggle in the Pacific. The broadcaster said the Japanese government has done its best to complete defensive arrangements, foreseeing such an unhappy event. France appears to have registered solid support for its leftist parties on the basis of latest returns from the municipal elections. The communists, socialists, and new resistance groups are increasing their strength, and even in the rural areas traditionally conservative, leftist candidates are maintaining their leads. Jacques Vendroux, brother-in-law of General de Gaulle, was retained as mayor of Calais, winning by an overwhelming vote. And that's the morning's news from around the world. This is James Stevenson in the NBC newsroom in New York saying goodbye, and I'll be seeing you tomorrow morning.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.
The Miles Laboratories, makers of Alka-Seltzer and One-A-Day brand vitamins, present Robert St. John, noted author and war correspondent.
Good morning. This is Robert St. John speaking today from San Francisco, California, and bringing you news and a special surprise today. I'll be back with the latest news about war and about peace in just a moment. But first, a brief message from Charles Lyon.
Here is a smart suggestion for you busy homemakers. Always keep a supply of Alka-Seltzer on hand. Then, if you want prompt relief from a touch of acid indigestion, an occasional headache, minor muscular aches and pains, or the ache-all-over misery of a cold, take Alka-Seltzer according to the simple directions on the package. You'll welcome the speedy, effective relief Alka-Seltzer can give. It's pleasant-tasting, easy to take, and it is not a laxative. That's Alka-Seltzer in the blue and white package. Now back to Robert St. John.
Today, the Nazi city of Munich is falling to the 7th American Army. Munich, the city where Adolf Hitler staged his infamous beer hall putsch, the city where all this Nazi business started. And there's been a bulletin this morning that boys of the Rainbow and Hellcat divisions have captured the notorious German concentration camp called Dachau near Munich and have liberated 32,000 political and religious prisoners. It was there that the Nazis established their first extermination factory. It was there that Pastor Neimuller has been imprisoned for so many years. But we don't yet have word as to whether he was found alive. Outside the camp, 50 boxcars were found, 50 boxcars loaded with bodies. Inside the camp, the American soldiers looked with horror at the devious devices which had been set up for putting the enemies of Hitler's Reich to their death. Gas chambers, torture rooms, atrocity mills, which proved that all these stories have not been what some people have called them, propaganda. Today, the Germans admit that General Patton's Third Army is close to a link-up with the Russians, which will trap all the Germans in Czechoslovakia. Today, at Supreme Allied Headquarters, there are indications that hostilities in Europe will last at the most merely a matter of days. There's one report, for example, that Himmler has given all three major allies a new offer of surrender. Today, the British are only 20 miles from Hamburg, the greatest seaport in all Europe and Germany's second largest city. Berlin is almost entirely in Russian hands. There's been a bulletin this morning from London that Soviet tanks have smashed into the Tiergarten, Berlin's great park, which the Nazis have converted into an underground fortress. Moscow says that the fall of Berlin is very imminent. I have a hunch that Marshal Stalin may proclaim victory in Berlin in time for the Russians to celebrate that great event tomorrow, which is May Day. Down in Italy, where Mussolini's body today lies dead, killed by Italian patriots, Field Marshal Alexander's armies are turning the Nazi retreat into a rout. Only 135 miles separate the Allied armies in the north from the Allied armies south of the Alps. The dissolution of the German armies is continuing at an accelerated speed. On Saturday in the West alone, 75,000 more prisoners were taken, and that makes more than 2.5 million prisoners captured since D-Day, not counting those the Russians have bagged. How Hitler's men can hold out much longer is really a mystery, but maybe they won't. Tokyo Radio today acknowledges that the end of the European war is very near, but of course Tokyo says that that won't make much difference as far as the war in the Pacific is concerned. Incidentally, Count Bernadotte, the man who was supposed to be carrying peace proposals and counter-proposals back and forth, today is reported to have made a new contact with Heinrich Himmler. Oh yes, and here is a postscript to the story of the killing of Mussolini and 17 of his aides. Today, the Italian government officially placed its stamp of approval on the executions, and the press in Rome hailed the development as something that paves the way for the establishment of real democracy down there in Italy. The official attitude seems to be that Mussolini met the fate he deserved. One newspaper in Rome makes this typical remark: "With the death of Mussolini disappears the most evident incarnation of the evil of this century." And that, combined with the imminent end of Hitler, offers a tremendous warning to those who aspire to new dictatorships. From Paris, France, the latest count in the first free election, which France has had in more than 7 long years, shows great support for all the parties of the left, the communists, the socialists, and that new resistance group. And now here's a word about this San Francisco conference. there's likely to be a crisis here today. British-American-Russian relations are a bit shaky at the moment. Of course, as with all crises, this one is likely to pass before the day is over. It's the Polish issue again. A showdown is likely to be forced by the Latin American countries with their efforts to have Argentina invited to join this search for peace. They say that Soviet Foreign Commissar Molotov has told the other Big Four delegates that he's willing to have Argentina seated if the Polish Lublin government is also allowed to send delegates. The issue may come to a head at today's meeting of the steering committee, which is due to start in just 3.5 hours. Over in Moscow, the Soviet newspaper Pravda, which is the official organ of the Communist Party, today said the difficulties do stand in the way of creating a world security league, but that such difficulties must be surmounted. Well, there are none of us who will disagree with that attitude. In the few hours that I have been in San Francisco, I've gained the impression that that is the spirit of San Francisco. That's the spirit of all the world today, except the few evil men who want no peace. The intelligence of world leaders is today being tested. Can they find the formula for giving a war-weary world what a war-weary world wants so very much? And now I'm going to try to bring you that surprise I talked about. We're going to switch from San Francisco, 3,000 miles across America, across the Atlantic, across the British Isles and the English Channel, to NBC in Paris.
The long and bloody but completely successful strategic air war is over. American air power in Europe now is committed only to tactical operations with our advancing armies. These tactical operations will continue with vigor. I should like immediately to pay tribute to the men of the air forces who paved the way so brilliantly for the land assault upon Germany. For almost 2 years before our ground troops landed on the Normandy shores, our flyers were striking Germany, first with light blows by a small force, fighting heroically against a numerically superior enemy, and finally with a powerful fleet of planes pounding relentlessly against the German war machine. There is no cubic foot of German air denied to us. Below our flyers lie the broken plants which once fed an army threatening to engulf all Europe. The campaign to achieve this began August 17, 1942, when 12 B-17s bombed the marshaling yards at Rouen. This was the first step to progressively dislocate and destroy the German military, industrial, and economic system. In order to fulfill that mission, it was clear to us that the German Air Force must first be knocked out, for the GAF stood as a wall between us and our objective. We began attacks upon vital airframe and assembly plants, airfields, and experimental stations, and upon the German pilots and planes in aerial combat. These attacks continued until they were climaxed by what we call the Big Week of February 20 to 26, 1944. When 3/4 of current German fighter factory production was smashed and the schedule for large-scale future production was upset. Thereafter, the Luftwaffe began dispersing its plants and fighting only when circumstances and weather were most favorable. With air supremacy ours, we were able to proceed with our strategic task, and we chose the vitally important German oil industry as the number one objective. The concentrated bombing of German-held oil plants by U.S. and RAF heavy bombers have deprived the enemy's armed forces of the fuel necessary for effective employment of their ground, sea, and air arms. But while the oil campaign, a primary objective, was proceeding, we were able to effectively perform other duties. We attacked German tank and armored vehicle production, V-weapon sites, and supply lines, and cooperated in ground and airborne operations with our troops in the invasion of the continent and the overrunning of Germany. Our air forces in the European theater, which can produce the greatest concentration of power the world has ever seen, are riding the crest of success now. But we should never lose sight of the fact that the buildup of this vast fleet required much time and shedding of blood. We were pitifully equipped when war struck. Fortunately, our allies in two great oceans kept the enemy at bay until we could muster enough strength to engage him. The two oceans, however, are now constricted because of technological developments such as V-weapons and airplanes of extremely long range. It is only through that fortunate circumstance, through the genius and hard work of our enemies, of our Americans at home, and the courage and skill of those at the front, that we are approaching victory over a powerful, well-prepared enemy. Without air supremacy, the European war could not be won. The lesson is one we should remember always. Never again must we be caught unprepared on land, on sea, or in the air.
Thank you, General Spots. This is Roy Porter in Paris, returning you to Robert St. John in the NBC newsroom in San Francisco.
Thank you, Roy Porter and General Spots, for a fine broadcast. I will be back with my favorite story of the day in just a moment. But first, a word from Charles Lyon.
You've heard that old saying, health is greater than wealth. Yes, grandfather said it, father said it, and you know it's true. But do you realize that the foundation of good health is good nutrition, and that vitamins are vital to good nutrition? Now, in the average diet, one common deficiency is the shortage of vitamins. And friends, that's why so many people are taking one-a-day brand multiple vitamin capsules these days. You see, each one-a-day brand multiple vitamin capsule contains 8 different vitamins. Taking one capsule each day gives you a basic daily supply of all the vitamins whose requirements are known. Now, if you feel tired and nervous too much of the time, if your energy seems below par, if your resistance to colds and other infections seems low, if you feel run down generally, it's quite possible your food is not supplying, among other things, all the vitamins you should have. So why not try one-a-day brand multiple vitamin capsules? They only cost you $1 a month to take. A 60-capsule package of one-a-day brand multiple vitamin capsules costs $2 at any drugstore, and that's enough to last you 60 days. Now, here is our offer. Get the 60-capsule package. Take one capsule a day for 60 days. And at the end of that time, if you are not satisfied, you can take the package back to your druggist, and he will gladly refund your money. If you would like to try one-a-day brand multiple vitamin capsules, now is the time to do it. Be sure to ask for and insist on one-a-day brand multiple vitamin capsules. And now, back to Robert St. John.
Here's a bulletin. General Clark, commander of the 15th Army Group, declared today that the military power of the Germans in Italy has been virtually destroyed. And here's my favorite story of the day. Maybe you remember that last week I told you about the appeals being made that more and more people than ever before plant victory gardens this year. Well, in Milwaukee, there were two families who had victory gardens last year, and they were planning to plant them again this year. But over the weekend, when they went around to the vacant lot to stake it out, they found that a huge billboard had been put up there, a billboard so large that it shades the entire lot. And so those two families will not be able to help save anyone from starvation next winter. That's all there is to the story, except that rather ironically, the billboard calls on everyone to plant more victory gardens. And now this is Robert St. John in San Francisco saying goodbye.
Friends, our Alka-Seltzer News of the World program featuring John W. Vandercook will be heard on many of these same stations this evening, 7:15 Eastern Wartime, 6:15 Central Wartime. And be sure to tune in again tomorrow morning at this same time for the news with Robert St. John. This is Charles Lyon. This is the National Broadcasting Company.